106.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of BizConnect, the bi-weekly business radio show with myself, Martin White, and today, my fabulous co-host...
Hi, I'm Amy Young from Custodian Data Centres.
Amy, great to have you with us today. Thank you so much for coming to the studio to record the show. It's beautiful out there, isn't it?
It is. It was a total pleasure driving in this morning, I have to say. Spring, first day of spring, definitely reflective in the weather this morning.
And it's been a fabulous weekend, but we've got a packed show for you today, as always. Not only have we got the fabulous Amy in the studio with us, but we've also got two guests. We've got Josh Long from Mojique Search Engine. So Josh is going to be joining us for the first part of the show. And then we've got James Bishop from SkyCloud, another IT services provider. And James is going to be talking to us all about what's going on in the cloud at the moment. So do stay with us. We're obviously live from 2 to 3.30. And we look forward to talking to you again after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect.
The show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today on this beautiful spring day. I'm delighted to say that we've got Amy Young from Custodian Data Centres with us, co-hosting the show today. Amy, super to have you with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Amy, what I'd like to do, if we can, is just talk a little bit initially about Custodian and who you guys are, what a data centre actually is and what it does. Tell us a little bit in your own words about Custodian and what you guys do.
Sure. So Custodian Data Centres, so we're based in the heart of Maidstone, Kent. We are a co-location provider. So what that means is we house server infrastructure for multitude of clients. So it could be that you have at the moment a full comms rack in your office, and the alternative is to house it within our data center environment. So benefits to that are we would take care of the security elements, the connectivity, the cooling, and importantly the power. It just enables fluidity for the clients themselves, so they're not stuck in an office environment where they're trying to have a space or an area where they have to keep cool for that server infrastructure, and just offers more resilience for our clients.
Mm. So, I mean, I can see huge benefits to that already. Why would a business not choose to go the co-location route, as it were? Why would a business choose to house all of that in-house, if you like, in their office space, as opposed to using somebody like you?
Sure. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to a business need. It's the business requirements are certainly at the first and foremost of any business decision when it comes to where to house the infrastructure. At the moment, as the IT industry moves so quickly, there are such a plethora of ideas of how you can support your business from an IT perspective. You can look at co-location, you could look at cloud, you could look at a hybrid mix of the two. So for some people, there's an age old of they still like to be able to physically touch their server and see the lights on. Where you can still have that with ourselves, but you can have the benefit of a team that are there operating it for you 24/7 and can have eyes and ears on the ground for you at all times. Mm. So it really does come down to what does the business need? What are the demands for you and your business? And how, if it's Kodo, fantastic. Mm. If it's a mixture of the two, that works as well. Mm. So it's not a one size fits all, for sure.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how you guys have been sort of affected by what's been going on, you know, during the lockdown, for example, people working remotely. How have you guys had to kind of adapt as a business, if you like, in that context? Or has it been sort of business as usual for you in many ways?
Sure. So Custodian has remained fully operational throughout. The interesting thing with a data centre is it almost flips it on its head, because it's very much what we're built for. We're built for resilience. We're built for... We work on a DR and a business continuity concept at all times. So everything, our technical team are... exceptionally great at making sure that we've thought worst case scenario and then some for these situations. We've seen definitely with our clients that they've all been impacted in different ways. We've seen some grow hugely over this period. We've been seeing some that have had exceptional surges in, for example, connectivity needs because they've got more people, you know, having to work remotely. Mm-hmm. For us internally, the only thing that we've had to do is safeguard our staff. So we have separated out, certainly on our technical front, we've divided our teams into two teams so that we can safeguard those as much as possible. And when it comes to us, our clients' well-being, because they do still come into the data centre, there's still a need. It's just adopting a safer approach. But yeah, business as usual for us.
Yeah, fabulous, good. And I know you have a slightly very much a sort of a green focus to what you do as well. You're very much about you know, energy consumption and making sure that you, I mean, data centers historically, I think it's fair to say, are probably one of the kind of the largest sort of energy consumers, if you like, in the IT world. There's a lot of talk at the moment about Bitcoin, funnily enough, and how much energy actually Bitcoin uses, which is interesting. And they're saying actually in the press at the weekend that might actually be its downfall in the end. But tell us a little bit about, you know, what does green mean for you guys in the context of a data centre in Maidstone?
So with ourselves, we're actually award-winning for our green credentials. A lot of that is actually due to how we physically cool the racks themselves. So with Custodian, we are always conscious of the industry that we work in, the reputation that this industry has, as you say, for large power draw. But when you're looking at a data center, it's not just that draw of power, it's the carbon footprint as a whole that you're looking at. So we are always looking at ways of streamlining that. We pioneered a evaporative cooling, which is using a water or a fog to actually cool the air coming through. It's fresh air cooling throughout the whole of the data center. We recycle the hot air as well throughout the building. And it's really looking, the key thing to sort of bear in mind if you're looking at a co-location provider is, and similarly a cloud as well, it's often misconceived that it's in the cloud and you don't have to think about it and it doesn't have a knock-on effect on your carbon footprint. That cloud will be in a data centre somewhere.
Exactly.
And if you don't take note of where that is and how they're looking at the environment and their impact on the environment, it will come back round at some point.
Yeah.
So you're really looking at that power usage effectiveness, you're looking at the cooling. Ultimately, if a co-location provider is doing it right, the major benefits to the companies and the clients coming on board is not just that green credential that comes with, but it will make it more cost effective as well. The more efficient we're working, the more things we're taking note of, and everything will come full circle.
Yeah, and I know we've got Josh from Mojeet coming on in a little bit. And I think for them, it was very important, actually. It was one of the sort of key considerations, wasn't it, in terms of where to, you know, who to work with on a kind of data centre level. For them, it was actually quite an important consideration.
Yeah, it really was. And when we are seeing a real shift in companies that they are looking for, not just the location, the connectivity, the resilience and the security, the compliance, all of those things that you would naturally think about when you're looking for a co-location partner. But they're looking for someone who holds the same values as them. It's important. You know, any client we engage in we're in it as a partnership. We don't want them to be going anywhere after 12 months, 36 months. We're in it for the long haul. And therefore, there's much onus on us to provide that longevity of service, be it the green message and everything, because there is for them. And they need someone with those core values at the very beginning.
I mean, everything else, you know, co-location, cloud connectivity, security, those are almost kind of tick box items now, aren't they? It's the kind of the you know the cherry on the top that businesses are looking for, and things like green commitment and sustainability are obviously more and more important. So.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of misconception of it's from 100% renewable energy, so that's good, it ticks that box. Yeah. That's a tiny drop, really, of what actually goes into a real green solution that you can be proud of and you can put your name to.
Yeah, brilliant. Fantastic. Well, I think what we're going to do now, Amy, is we're going to play a little bit more music, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about some of the trends, if you like, that COVID has been responsible for in terms of, remote working that we're now seeing with businesses, and what the kind of future looks like on that level, I think, in terms of, businesses perhaps facilitating more remote working and moving to smaller offices, and what that means for you guys really in terms of co-location and things like that. So we'll play a little bit more music and we'll be straight back after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Biz Connect radio show with myself, Martin White, and my fabulous co-host today,
Amy Young.
Amy, thanks so much for joining us on this beautiful spring day. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about custodian data centres, what you guys do in terms of co-location, cloud, connectivity, security solutions. We were also talking about your green focus as a data centre. But what I wanted to do now, if we can, is just talk about some of the kind of the longer term trends that we're now going to see emerging as a result of the COVID crisis. And in particular, this kind of move away from the office towards more kind of remote working and how you guys see that developing in the future. So tell us a little bit about that from your side of things.
Sure. So, our client base is exceptionally varied. Many of them also have a large client base. The work from home, there's no getting away from that in the current pandemic. It's very much at the forefront of everybody's minds, and I think businesses that maybe have been reluctant to adopt that previously have very much had to embrace it with full pelts to keep the businesses going. Certainly from our perspective, we've seen a real trend in people now starting to plan for the future, whatever that may look like, and how their IT can fit in that model for them. So we have seen a large volume of businesses that have been opting to move away from the large corporate offices, maybe looking for a smaller satellite office, maybe moving out of London because they don't want their staff commuting in anymore. It's not to say that's for everyone. It's just some of the trends and that we're really seeing. And in turn, with a lot of the clients, it's leaving them wondering where their IT needs to really sit, and how that works for them moving forward.
And have they got the physical space for it, I guess,
absolutely.
As well?
Absolutely. So it's something that's been thrust upon businesses, isn't it? Usually these things, if they were looking to move a workforce remotely, they would probably take 12 months plus planning, let's be honest. And they haven't had the luxury of that, but my goodness, haven't all businesses adapted well? And isn't it great to see? I do think it is going to be interesting, those that are still going to take the stance of back to normal, i.e. pre-pandemic, and how that's going to go down with people, I'd be interested to see.
There's a lot of talk, isn't there, around it at the moment, and everybody's kind of, I think, was it Barclays came out last week and said that, this kind of remote working is a fad. It wasn't, fad wasn't the word that the chief exec used, but it was something similar. Mm. It was a kind of a short-term thing. It was temporary, and that, businesses would migrate back to the office. I don't know whether he truly believes that or if he's even got the barometer of his workforce, because I read a recent study that said, and this was a Boston Consulting Group study, And they interviewed 2,000 UK employees, and 67% of those ultimately said that they want to be able to split their time between a physical workplace and home working. So,
yeah.
You know, it, I think if employers try and sort of wield the big stick and say, right, everybody back in the office now, I'm not sure, you know, they're going to be able to retain their staff, you know.
No. I mean, there's no denying there are definitely some industries that don't have the luxury of workers being able to work remotely, and the physicalities and that of their role just dictate that they have to be on premise to or on site to be able to do their role. Certainly speaking from my own experience with my own team, my team are just missing that engagement massively. And I think definitely a split of physical in the workplace and remote would keep a lot of people very happy. All remote, again, I can only speak from personal experience. I personally just love the engagement and being able to bounce ideas off of the team and everything when you're there in front of them.
I've done Barclays an injustice. It was actually, I remember now, it was actually Goldman Sachs. So it was the CEO, I think, of Goldman Sachs Investment Bank. And where he was coming from on all of that, I think, was the fact that, you know, Goldman's is a business that trains its people, you know, from the bottom up. And you know, it's about shadowing people in the office and learning the job on the job, as it were. And of course, you know, if you've got new people joining a company, and you know, it could be a firm of accountants or, you know, perhaps a firm of solicitors, where, you know, you really need that kind of closeness in terms of, you know, a mentor, you know, somebody that they're actually kind of working with closely on a day-to-day basis. You know, when you're learning the ropes, as it were, then obviously you need to be in an office environment to facilitate that.
Absolutely. So. And I think one thing that's forgotten as well, I mean, I myself, I've had multiple new starters during the pandemic, which we're very, very fortunate to be in a position to do that. But the one thing that's forgotten as well, there's the role and the job that they're there to do, which is obviously the core. There's also getting across the company itself, the environment, like how you engage with all of the different departments. And actually, that's where technology sort of puts quite a rigid line down it. That camaraderie between your peers and that is something that's so difficult to get through a screen. That, you know, however, I mean, technology is fantastic, and thank goodness that we've had it during this pandemic, because it's enabled so much. But certainly when it comes to a team environment, for me, that you cannot beat, a great team building within round a table. Everybody collaborating and putting their ideas together. Yeah. You can't beat that.
So we're going to end up with a hybrid solution by the sounds of it. But the one thing that is certain is that, you know, businesses won't necessarily need the size of office space that they've got currently. They are going to look to downsize. They might have more regional kind of satellite offices, for example, to kind of help facilitate that same, you know, coming into the office, on a two or three day a week kind of temporary basis. So they're going to need your help ultimately to kind of help set up that infrastructure and you know, continue that seamlessly.
It's quite interesting, actually. We've had a few of the newest clients that have joined us within the last few months, and one of the key things that people look to when they're looking at a co-location provider is the location. And for many businesses, it was, we have to be in the centre of London. We have to, that's where we have to be, without actually looking at why. What are the other things that are really important to you? But what we've seen is a real shift on people saying, right, where is our IT director based? Where are their teams based? Because ultimately, it's them that are going to be the ones at 2 o'clock in the morning jumping in the car. And do they want to be sending their teams into locations when they've got somewhere that's 20 to 40 minutes away that can do if not a better, better job for them. Yeah. So it is interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly a very exciting, brave new world that I think we're entering into. I think what we'll do is we'll leave it there for now if we can, Amy.
Sure.
Obviously, we're going to talk to Josh in a few minutes' time about Magique and get their perspective on things. But I've just got a couple of events and some news that I need to read out quickly if I can. So we had Let's Do Business Group on the show a couple of weeks ago, a business support organisation based in East Sussex and also at the Terrace in Maidstone, just up the road from you, Amy. And they are they're recruiting at the moment a business manager. So this is somebody that they're looking for to work with smaller businesses in particular, to guide them through the business support landscape that's out there, in particular things like new business startups, for example. How do I get a business off the ground? So you'd be based in the Terrace in Maidstone 3 days a week, actually working face-to-face with businesses, just providing that kind of critical business support in and around the kind of Maidstone area. So if that's something that floats your boat, if you like working with businesses, providing business support on that level, do get in touch with Let's Do Business Group. You'll find this job posted on our supplymybusiness.co.uk website on the community page, or you can have a look at the Let's Do Business Group website, which is letsdobusinessgroup.co.uk. But you need to be quick because it's today that you need to apply for this buy. So get your skates on and get your CV in today. We've got some networking happening this week. Our good friend Terry Botfield, normally based face-to-face down on the marsh, down in New Romney, but obviously it's online networking at the moment, so it's a Zoom networking this Wednesday from 10:30, normally runs till about 12. You can find all of the information at marshnetwork.co.uk. You can also go free. There's only a £5 fee to join the networking anyway, which goes to a local charity. But if you email terry@botfield.net, you can actually go to your first meeting free. And I think he's got about 30 people regularly attending that on a bi-weekly basis now as well. So fantastic networking group happening this Wednesday. Again, the information for that is also on the supplymobusiness.co.uk website as well. And just finally, we've got some Starting Right business training workshops happening. So Adam Clegg, who's also been on the show recently, is running some startup business training workshops. They're 1 hour a week on the 9th, 16th, 23rd and 30th of March. So if you are someone that's thinking about starting your own business and you need some initial kind of guidance and questions answered, I would suggest you sign up for this. Again, it's all on the Supply My Business website. There's a community page on there. Have a look at that, or you'll also find it on Eventbrite. And now I think what we'll do is we'll play a little bit more music and then we will talk to Josh Long at Magique. So please join us after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm delighted to say that we've now got Josh Long with us on the phone. And Josh is the marketing manager at Magique Search Engine. Josh, great to have you with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Brilliant to have you on the show today. Josh, just tell us a little bit about Magique, if you can, and who you guys are and what you do.
Of course. So, Magique is quite a rarity in the kind of modern world of the web, which is crawler and index search engine, which means that we actually do the work of going out into the web and building an index of results that can be queried in order to serve the people using Magique with a list of the different directions that they can go when they're searching the web. And the other thing that I guess is very much on people's minds at the moment is that Magique is a non-tracking search engine, which means that we don't use JavaScript in order to collect large amounts of data on the people who are using the search engine. And if Wikipedia is to be trusted, and you can cross-reference this with archive.org, we were the first ever search engine to have a non-tracking policy in place, which is quite a cool little piece of internet history, I guess, that Mojica was a part of.
Mm. That's really interesting, isn't it? So non-tracking, so completely anonymized kind of search history for users. That's what we're talking about here.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So the standard kind of model for a search engine, I mean, like when I say search engine, there are probably one or two things that are popping into your head, is to basically be kind of an advertising platform that utilizes the things that are collected about the people who are using the search engine in order to serve them more and more relevant ads, track them around the web, and do the absolute best it can to push them towards different ends. And we just don't collect any of that data. It's kind of a values thing. We have no real interest in collecting that and using it to provide ads. We're a bit different when it comes to that aspect of things. And to be honest, we find that activity to be something that's quite kind of creepy, and also it has effects upon the web, which is kind of supposed to be a place for free and open communication and access to information. It has effects upon that are not necessarily pushing it in a direction that we believe is good for humanity.
And I guess it's fair to say that, you know, that Google pretty much have a monopoly over all of that kind of search data as well at the moment, don't they? I mean, I'm not sure what their kind of user data looks like at the moment, but is it not over 90% of people searching on the web are probably using Google?
Yeah, I mean, it depends upon where exactly you get your figures from, because obviously this is something that you don't have a complete picture of the entirety of the world at any one point. But in the recent cases that were brought in the United States, it was in the kind of like 93-95% of all of the searches which are being undertaken globally are happening on Google, which is pretty out there, because there are quite large populations of individuals in countries that kind of serve their own linguistic needs. Who don't make the numbers turn in the opposite direction. So it's considerable.
And it is very worrying, isn't it? Because I guess, you know, if I think about my own kind of personal circumstances, you know, I use Google and Google's kind of suite of products because it's easy. And I have, for example, I have a Google Drive, which I use to share data with people, that work with me in my organization. So they can kind of, you know, they can access my Google Drive and they can pull down spreadsheets and things like that. But I also have my email accounts with Google as well. So I'm pretty much, and then of course on a day-to-day basis, I'm using Google for all my, my SEO and all my kind of, you know, individual kind of searches as well. So I'm pretty much as a business tied into everything that Google do, which leaves me kind of quite exposed, I guess, doesn't it, in many ways?
Yeah, I mean, it leaves you exposed from a data privacy perspective, but also you think about the quantity of power that Google has in that situation with you as a business owner. It's quite it's extremely uneven, and I mean, one of the reasons why people have used so many of Google's products is because of that convenience factor. And I mean, one of the things that we strive for as Mojik is to make it so that part of the puzzle that we can work on, the search portion, that we're listening to people's needs and attempting to provide people with kind of a true alternative in search. I mean, you raised the issue of email. I mean, nowadays there are a bunch of other providers, but there's still this historic factor of people having Gmail accounts or Google Mail accounts, because they were one of the kind of first instantiations of that free email play. And I guess it's no kind of a big surprise that on reflection, that was something that Google undertook in order to increase the breadth, increase the penetration that it had into this kind of big glob of data that is something that underlies everything that they do. The Gmail inboxes are a great source of information, be it metadata or location stuff. It really does a system to have this very, very large amount of a large suite of different products that they're pulling this data from.
Josh, do you think that that's more about consumer awareness as well? It's something that, that more so now is coming to the forefront of not just business, but home users, personal users and everything's mind is that their actual data and everything is such a valuable commodity to businesses to then monopolise on. But certainly going back, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, the understanding from that user who was signing in, was searching these things, wasn't really there, was it?
Yeah, no, completely. That's completely on point. I mean, to drag it back to something that I said at the start when I was talking about kind of the history of Mojeek, when our non-tracking privacy policy was put in place in 2006, it was done because of the personal values of our founder. Mm. It wasn't because there was any kind of large appetite within the people who are consuming things on the web for that privacy. There wasn't this deep understanding of the things that can be done with the data. And I welcome in a big way the documentaries that we're seeing on our streaming platforms and the narratives that are arising in the media at the moment around that awareness, because it's a very essential part of the puzzle. Like one of the things that Google makes a lot of benefit from is the fact that people for a long time have been ignorant. And I mean, can you expect much different? We've had this gigantic uptick in the number of different devices in and around your house that have internet capabilities and the amount of different pieces of tech that we use on a daily basis. And I can't expect every single person to have a deep understanding of these things, the flows that happen between them and stuff like that. And that's something that we consider ourselves to be a part of. Like at Mojeek, we are constantly attempting to help in that educational process, because it's completely vital. People need to understand these things before they can make conscious decisions in their own lives in order to collectively make a better picture.
I just wonder how long it's going to be before we have to start seeing some regulation, you know, in the marketplace, because it's not just Google. I mean, it's, you know, it's Facebook, obviously. Facebook have been in the news again, I think, recently. You know, they were restricting certain information access, I think, in Australia because they had a row going on with the government there. And you think, crikey, you know, this is a tech company holding a national country to ransom, if you like. You know, we had the whole kind of Trump election campaign scandal, didn't we, with Cambridge Analytica. And, you know, I mean, I saw a documentary about that. And actually, I think the Trump election campaign and Cambridge Analytica had paid Facebook about $90 million to have access to, you know, Facebook data for them to mine, to then build voter profiles, to then send targeted messaging out, you know, in terms of advertising, which is, you know, kind of how it works in the advertising world anyway. And you know, then we've had Twitter banning Trump recently with his kind of his re-election campaign. So I think it's fair to say that you know, if you hold if you're in a position of power when it comes to data, you know, it's you do hold too much power in many ways, Josh, don't you? And we need to kind of pull back on that a bit, I would suggest.
Yeah, I mean, completely. A lot of people have said, Jaron Lanier in particular, one of Microsoft's people who works on kind of AI and VR and stuff like that, that data is the new oil. And I mean, I think that is something that is kind of a useful analogy, but the difference is that you can't copy oil from one location and paste it in another location and still have access to the original oil. It's kind of something a lot more powerful than that because of the things that you can put it to do. And all of the examples that you just happened upon there, and I know that you kind of made that you made that point, but I'll underline it again, is that what we're seeing is kind of a problem of bigness that is coming from these different giant multinational corporations, and it worries me when one of them is able to kind of make a threat against the government. Because I mean, we don't have a vote on what happens at Twitter, we don't have a vote on what happens at Facebook, really. It's not it's not the same as kind of a democratically accountable process.
Mm.
But yeah,
Josh,
it's very worrying.
Yeah, it is. Josh, I think what we'll do is we'll leave that there now. I think we've kind of we've teed it up nicely in terms of kind of, you know, issues around data privacy and kind of just kind of scale and monopoly of the big kind of tech giants. I think what we'll do is we'll play a little bit of music, and then when we come back, we'll talk about Majik and how you guys actually work to overcome some of these issues, and talk about your kind of proprietary indexing and algorithms and how people shouldn't necessarily or wouldn't necessarily expect to see the same results through you as you might do through a traditional kind of Google search. So bear with us, Josh, stay on the line, and we'll be straight back after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm delighted to say that we've got with us a fabulous co-host today in Amy Young from Custodian Data Centres, who's with me in the studio. Amy, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
But we've also got, at the moment, we've got Josh Long on the line from Majik Search Engine. Josh, lovely to have you with us from sunny Brighton as well today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks ever so much.
Josh, before the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, some of the kind of the major kind of issues around the big tech companies and kind of data monopoly and how they use data. What I'd like to do is talk a little bit about Majik now in terms of how you guys work and how you work differently, most importantly, in order to kind of to display search results and what you're not doing, if you like, with that data on the back end. So just tell us a little bit, how do I actually use Majik? How would I actually use your search engine?
Brilliant question. Start with the fundamentals, eh? So yeah, you would go to Majik.com, and the experience that we've created, like kind of the way that you would journey through the search engine, feels very, very similar to if you were using a Google or a Bing. I think the thing that I would like to underline here is that what we kind of encourage people to do is to think about search as something that is not necessarily a one and done. Like, you don't pick a search engine that you're going to sit with for all of the searches that you're going to do. Different search engines will pull from different indexes, and so you can see them as kind of different tools that can be used for different things. So I would encourage people to have more than one search engine that they are kind of comfortable with using of, and use different search engines in order to have a better reflection of the vast amount of different information that is out there on the web.
Mm.
So yes, go to Majik, bookmark it, have it ready, and add it. If you're using a browser that allows extensions, which I would encourage you to do, have it added as one of your options, and, you know, flip between things. You don't necessarily have to be sat on one search engine all the time.
Mm. That's a really good point, actually, because I've obviously done that in preparation for the show today. I've searched, you know, some of the kind of the key terms that I would search in order to find my business. And you're absolutely right. The results, you know, bear no comparison with the results that I would get on Google. But that isn't a bad thing. What that means is I'm getting a kind of a broader, more representative search result of all the businesses that are out there that can be found according to that search term. And that's a positive rather than a negative, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. One of the things that kind of messes around with the information that you get out of a search engine such as Google is the degree to which it is corporatized. Mm. It is something that has had a lot of people spend a lot of money in order to get far up results. Mm. And that's just a process that has not really been undertaken with what we're offering at the moment.
And going back to what you were saying earlier, the top results are all paid for search results as well, whereas yours doesn't have any paid search results in the listing. It's just the kind of the natural results that come up as a result of you having indexed a site.
Exactly that. Mm. Yeah, and we are currently in the process of introducing some contextual advertisements that would allow for some paid elements, but once again, when you're using a Google, there are so many other aspects that fed into the what you see or what you don't see that just are not factors with Magic.
Mm. And again, you know, another good example of that, I guess, is Google My Business. You know, that's something we didn't mention earlier in terms of, you know, email and search and Google Drive. But there's also Google My Business. So, you know, when you set up a Google My Business account on Google, naturally that will feed into a search engine result as well. So everything is kind of stacked according to Google, isn't it?
Yes, it is very much the world of Google, yeah. Which is problematic when it comes to the power balances that exist on the web.
Yeah. So don't necessarily expect to see the same results, in other words, that you would see on Google when you use Magique. But what you will see are there other results that may actually be just as interesting as the results that you do see on Google.
Exactly that. Uh-huh. I mean, I take it like if you were going to research a subject and you picked up one book on the subject, you'd look at the information that was contained within and you'd learn something from it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There are other books that can talk to you about whatever that subject is.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. So tell us, what is your business model? Because, you know, the Google business model is quite obvious. but what is your business model? How are you guys actually going to kind of monetize this and commercialize it? You know, how do you, I mean, you know, you're a business like any other. How do you make money from doing what you do?
So for a decent while, we've been lucky enough to kind of rely on money that's come from a bunch of private investors who have sort of seen the value in what we're doing. Because crawling and indexing is something that not a lot of search engines do these days, things that we call search engines, things like DuckDuckGo, Startpage, Quant, they all use other people's indexes, which means that's something that makes us very different.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, you can't rely on inbound investments the entirety of the time that you exist as a business. So we've started to introduce contextual advertisements. And I guess if anybody listening to this was looking for a third factor, a non-Google, non-Bing entity that would be able to provide them with an option when it comes to search advertising, then please get in contact. That's something that we are starting off at the moment. And then on top of these contextual advertisements that we're introducing, we've also had some money that we've made off the back of access to our API. So obviously, as a search engine, we can have people pay to query our results if they have some kind of a use for that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always on the lookout for other ways in which we can monetize this. Obviously, we are an alternative entity that doesn't engage in tracking, and the place that we sit in the web means that, and the size of our team means that we can always innovate and jump on top of new and emerging ways of gaining revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as long as those ways of gaining revenue do not conflict with our core values of not tracking people around the web, being pro-privacy and being anti-big tech and all of that stuff.
Mm. Fabulous, good. And I guess at the moment you're out there indexing as many sites as you possibly can in order that, you know, your search results are as robust as they possibly can be.
Exactly that. Mm-hmm. It's the index is the key missing piece when it comes to a lot of the entities on the web that attempt to provide people with an alternative in search. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we have been focused on for a very long time and continue to focus on because it's the most valuable part of all of this.
Mm. Josh, it's been absolutely fantastic to have you with us today. We do need to end it there, unfortunately. But, you know, as you said, just give us another shout out for the website address for people to go on and have a search.
Well, it's Mojeek, which is MOJEEK.com. We'll get you there. And, yeah, try us out and see what we're like. We always welcome feedback. There are some quite easy pathways to tell us how you feel about the search results or give us any kind of comments or praise.
Fantastic. Josh, lovely to have you with us today. And we look forward to catching up with you again in the very near future. But
thank you ever so much.
Thanks for now.
Thanks, Josh.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks so much for joining us today on the BizConnect radio show with myself, Martin White, and my fabulous co-host in the studio, Amy Young.
Hello, good afternoon.
Amy, great to have you with us. Now, I know we've got two more guests on the line at the moment as well. Why don't you introduce them for us?
We do. We've got James Bishop and Richard Ravenhill from Sky Group.
Lovely to have you with us, guys.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. Amy, I'm going to hand over to you at this point, because this is far more your sort of technical expertise area than it is mine. But just kind of if you can, guys, just set up the kind of the whole idea of cloud computing for us. What it actually means. What does it entail?
Well, I mean, it's a cost-effective alternative, really, to hosting, you know, expensive IT infrastructure in-house, and I suppose leverages the investment that a third party, obviously in this instance Sky, has already made in an infrastructure platform to deliver things like, you know, hosted servers, virtual desktops, cloud-based storage that's accessible from anywhere, really, on any device across the internet.
And when it comes to the cloud, for some companies it can be a really scary concept, i.e. they've got on-premise infrastructure, they're not sure how to do it. How does Sky Cloud get involved in that actual migration piece for them?
It's an interesting one, because obviously the needs of every individual business varies, and what they've got on site varies. So typically what we do is to begin with is carry out, a free of charge audit of the infrastructure that they've got, number of sites, number of users, kind of how they interact and access those applications, any integration between them, and then work with that organisation to understand what they're trying to achieve as a business over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
And then we put together kind of an IT roadmap for them, if you like. There's what a lot of organisations, you know, talk about sort of like the journey to the cloud. That journey differs for each individual business, so we help, you know, each of them to understand what that is and how best to benefit from the cloud.
And I guess, guys, the reality is, a lot of us are already using the cloud on a kind of day-to-day basis anyway. And we were talking to Josh earlier on about the big kind of tech companies and their kind of monopoly on data, you know, people like Google, for example, and Google Drive and email services and everything else. And, you know, you've got Microsoft, you've got, 365, for example. You know, day-to-day, a lot of us are already using it, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Not just, I suppose, in that capacity, but yeah, also, I suppose, on a personal level as well. Mm-hmm. Things like Facebook, online banking. We're already using it, to quite an extent. Mm. Just obviously not necessarily aware of it, I suppose, as an individual. I think that's part of the challenge. You know, from our point of view, we embrace it personally, but then when it comes to business, there's a lot more concerns around security and things like that. But
it goes back to something I touched on earlier, that you've still got some clients who physically like to be able to see their servers. They like to be able to see the lights on them. They like to be able to touch them and know that they're all okay. And it's sort of breaking that mold and passing the baton of trust, really, isn't it, over to a partner such as yourselves, that you're going to do all of that for them and it's all going to be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think there is an element of trust that's a sort of a barrier that has to be overcome. You know, you're right, you know, people have servers and equipment on site that's worked well for years. Mm. And, you know, you're trusting a third party basically to take the business into their hands and look after you. Mm. That can be a big jump for some businesses to take. But we hope that sort of our approach, our sort of consultative approach and coming in and explaining what the transition will mean, you know, fully understanding how the business currently operates, so that we can map out, you know, an alternative cloud way of doing things. And just reassuring the business that, you know, that they're in safe hands, basically. The promises around our contract, you know, including things like making sure that their data is backed up, you know, is something which helps form that trust.
Absolutely. And did you see with the pandemic, did you see a lot of knee-jerk reaction of businesses going, oh, the way out is we're just going to pop it in the cloud, get it out, because that's going to help everybody work from home? And it's quite a hard piece to manage with customers, isn't it? That it's not just a flip a switch and it's there and good to go. And there's a lot of other considerations to take into place about the longevity of that switch and that move as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Some businesses just weren't set up or weren't prepared for a disaster happening. Nobody expected to be locked down for months on end and not able to access their premises. And of course, where investment hadn't been made before to sort of protect the business, or there weren't sort of disaster recovery plans available to certain companies, then they've been forced to quickly adapt, I guess, in order to continue to trade and survive. A lot of our customers, which reverted to home working, were benefiting from the fact that they were already in the cloud, because for them it was just a matter of switching devices that they used, or setting up home PCs, or buying in additional laptops, and then just carrying on working the way they had been, albeit from a different environment. So we saw a huge number of purchases for laptops, for example, where people were having to sort of jettison the desktop PC and grab a laptop to work from home. We have a lot of support requests coming in for setting up home PCs and making sure that all the appropriate connectivity was in place. One other sort of big issue, of course, is connectivity itself. Generally, home users don't have the benefit of performance, internet lines like lease lines, for example, which come with service level agreements, guaranteed up and down speed. You're flipping to home working on a sort of a home broadband, which doesn't necessarily carry those kinds of SLAs or performance. So, there have been some challenges in doing so, but, largely we've overcome that in our delivery of our services. It's worked pretty well.
We did see quite an influx, I suppose, from a new business perspective as well. I mean, as Richard said, the existing customer base were already enabled to kind of make that seamless switch to working from home, but unfortunately, there were businesses out there, I suppose, that weren't as prepared. I suppose being forced to work from home did expose kind of problems with their current setup, whether it be with a cloud service provider that perhaps wasn't working as efficiently as they should be, or their on-premise infrastructure that just didn't basically facilitate that remote access.
And do you think now this is, like, with the vast array of clients and everything you have, if you were both betting men, do you think that is how business is going to be moving forward? Or do you think you will see creeping back into the office? What's your take on it?
I do think some businesses will adopt the work from home philosophy, really, because it's been proven to work. I think there was, a lot of owners and managers out there sort of a little bit nervous of letting staff work from home, because obviously they can't, they can't necessarily manage them as easily as they can face-to-face. Obviously managing KPIs and ensuring output is maintained has been more challenging to do remotely. But if you look at the tooling and the ability to conduct meetings, in products like Microsoft Teams and Zoom, there have been great ways of enabling the remote working philosophy. And just to give you an idea, one of our largest clients, a company called FSB, have actually elected to actually do that, just that, to actually permanently revert to a work from home model. So they had over 100 staff decided they were going to basically close down their offices in Shoreditch and flip to the remote working model. They have all the equipment hosted with us in across two sites, your facility and our London facility. And for them, it's actually worked out really, really well. They've saved fortune in office.
I was going to say, I bet the bank balance looks a lot healthier without a Shoreditch office.
what they had said is that they may look to some kind of hub model. And that might be sort of a halfway house where businesses have small spaces just to gather occasionally, but predominantly may work elsewhere.
That's, I think, the trend that I think you'll see come through. I think it goes back to, the kind of that change in mentality that you've got a lot of organisations that were happy to see their kit, tangible kit sat in the corner of their office. And a lot of those organisations had the same kind of view on personnel. They believed that they had to be in the office in order to be working. Richard alluded to, that's not the case. People have adapted to you know, monitoring and managing staff remotely. So I think in order to cut costs and, you know, I suppose as a result of not knowing, you know, what the future holds, you know, nobody was expecting the pandemic, you know, to last as long as it has.
No.
You know, a lot of organisations are adapting to incorporate that, I think, as part of their strategy, be it on a full-time basis or certainly as a DR strategy.
Mm. Guys, what I think we're going to do now, if we can, is we're going to take a short break. We're going to play a bit of music. And then when we come back, I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about your consultancy services in terms of how you sort of handhold clients through this migration, for want of a better word, process. And whether or not, you know, you're replacing the traditional kind of IT managed service provider role in that context, and how that impacts kind of resource inside the business. So we're going to play a little bit of music and we'll be straight back after this.
105.9 Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect,
the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for staying with us for the final part of today's show. We've got Amy Young with us in the studio from Custodian Data Centres, and we've got James Bishop on the line and Richard Ravenhill from SkyCloud. Guys, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Martin. Thank you.
Super to have you both with us today. Before the break, we were talking about, you know, what the cloud is, what cloud computing is. What I'm keen to understand a little bit more about is your role in terms of hand-holding clients that actually, you know, see the opportunity for kind of moving their business into the cloud more. How does that actually kind of work on a consultancy level in terms of how you would work with an individual client on that basis?
I think there's three steps, really, that we tend to work through with an organisation that's looking to, I suppose, migrate to the cloud. The first, as I alluded to earlier, is the audit, which I suppose to begin with, really, is just as much for our benefit, really, and that's understanding, you know, the business, how it operates, you know, the infrastructure and users and the estate that we're dealing with. In an attempt, I suppose, to try and replicate that as close as possible and make the transition as seamless as possible to our cloud platform. The second, really, I suppose, is a proof of concept, I suppose, which is, I suppose, replicating their infrastructure in a sense, obviously in a smaller and an offline, you know, non-live capacity, and provide access to that so that we can determine, you know, I suppose, the feasibility for those organisations to move specific applications to the cloud, because, you know, obviously sometimes there's criteria around how performant they need to be, you know, access capabilities, and that's a good, I suppose, gauge for us as well in terms of how to determine the best migration path for that organisation. Mm. And then, of course, obviously the final stage, the migration itself, which we work very closely with the client to determine when is a suitable time to do that, and that can be, you know, normal office hours, outside of hours, you know, weekends, whatever really suits the business so that it's as, you know, least disruptive as possible, and that involves obviously taking snapshots or copies of their critical data and application data, moving that across to our platform, and then obviously reconfiguring the sites and the users to be able to connect to that as opposed to their on-premise hardware.
Mm.
And that's a process that Richard and his team work with the client, handhold the users, and provide, you know, contingency after the event to ensure that there are no kind of niggly issues or kind of any teething problems, if you like.
Because there's obviously some really clear kind of advantages to going down this road, and I'm thinking at the moment, particularly in terms of remote working that, you know, that we've been talking about throughout the show today, is this kind of standardized kind of hosted desktop environment, for example. So just kind of explain to us a little bit about what that actually means, and what the advantages to businesses are there.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we utilise remote desktop services quite heavily for these types of deployments.
Mm.
And, you know, one of the benefits is that it's, you know, generally presents the user with a pretty familiar
interface to work with. You know, it's Windows. It has the, you know, the usual icon layouts and, you know, buttons and menus that you would expect from your local computer. So, you know, it doesn't disorientate users when they're logging in. And ultimately, we can provide a standardized desktop for the entire business, utilizing sort of policies and the technology that Remote Desktop provides, so that users all have a sort of a seamless standardized layout of applications.
Mm.
Applications can be controlled based on, you know, users and groups, depending on the needs of the business. So we can present everything to everybody, or we can present certain sets of applications and data to other users.
Mm.
And so it provides a sort of a centralized, controlled environment.
Mm.
So when users are logged in, they can only act or do what the company policy allows.
You mentioned a key word there. I think, Richard, you know, which is control. And, you know, Amy was talking about, you know, some clients just like to see the physical server, and they like to see the, you know, the lights going on and off and what have you. But you mentioned the word control there. And I think, I guess, for employers at the moment, you know, particularly with this kind of this forced move to more remote working, you know, control is actually really important, isn't it, in terms of, you know, what the, you know, the employee, if you like, working remotely is actually physically able to do on the machine that you give them in order to do their job.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, a lot of businesses, you know, we've found over the years, you know, in some cases don't have particularly strong policies around IT, what you can, what you can't do.
Mm.
You know, we do find sort of, you know, users with software installed on machines that perhaps, you know, we wouldn't recommend.
Mm.
You know, we have users with permissions or admin control over their local machines, or and data, which is the key one, obviously,
yeah,
with you know, the GDPR changes that came into force not long ago. You know, there's much stricter governance now around what you can and can't do with information. And so Remote Desktop Services allows us to basically take all that data and put it into a secure environment, which the users can then access based on, you know, their roles.
Yeah.
And what we do as part of our audit process is very often we'll sit down and look at the folder structure, the data structures that are currently in place, and provide advice around how to tidy those things up to make them more secure, you know, to provide role-based access based on, you know, security groups, and just to utilize the NTFS, you know, security that's been around for the best part of the last 20 years. Mm. You know, it's well-known, well-trusted technology to protect the data.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's one of the great benefits.
It's a really interesting point.
One of the biggest challenges, I think, that, you know, businesses have been forced into this, you know, working from home kind of strategy is obviously being able to manage, you know, a set of users or, you know, employees that are geographically distanced now and separate. So being able to, I suppose, police and enforce, you know, heightened security features is one of the biggest benefits as well that we've kind of had feedback about as well.
And businesses just get into bad habits, don't they? I mean, you know, from a kind of productivity point of view, you know, I'm sure that you know, this process of rationalization, because that's what it is, actually has some huge benefits there in terms of the way businesses just do business on a kind of day-to-day basis, you know, whether that's, you know, the kind of the management of the business, or whether that's actually individual employees and their kind of their working day. You know, this kind of really pulls everything, you know, to pieces and looks at each of those individual kind of tasks and processes, I guess, and actually, you know, at the end of it, I'm sure you know, your clients actually realise some huge productivity gains there as well.
That's right. The increase in productivity that's been reported back to us has been quite staggering, to be honest, because I suppose, you know, one of the things that everyone, you know, really struggled with is that lack of structure, you know, being able to go into an office and sit at a desk and everything like that. So, you know, providing a uniform environment that no matter where the users, you know, connect in from is still the same. And the fact that they've almost been given the freedom to, you know, connect and work on a daily basis without, you know, that perhaps the man management has actually increased productivity pretty much across the board.
Mm. It's interesting that, isn't it? You know, you set people free.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, they find a better way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I think the other thing to point out, because sometimes I think that businesses are deterred from doing this because they think, oh, no, I couldn't work with them because we're not big enough, or maybe we're too big. Or so from your background of clients, I know they're varied in terms of size, industry, and everything. So what message would you put out there for maybe a smaller company or a larger company that think, oh, what's your key message from the company to say this is what we do, we can cover it for everybody?
I think fundamentally, irrespective of size, the application of cloud computing as a concept is incredibly versatile. So whether you are a smaller, you know, business with little to no IT, you know, resource in-house, then I suppose trusting a solution provider, a cloud service provider such as Sky, delivers significant benefit to the business, the ongoing operating costs and the efficiencies that you can achieve. As you look at larger enterprises, again, I think cloud still has its benefits, perhaps not necessarily in terms of an entire infrastructure, although we do have certain customers that have gone down that path. But you might find then that certain sectors or certain size clients only have a particular, I suppose, pain point that they're looking to address with cloud. So they might have a lack of skills when it comes to Microsoft Exchange or databases, for example. And at that point, people, we've also seen, you know, make a step to the cloud and trust somebody that does have those skills and expertise to hand.
Yeah, no, yeah, definitely.
Small businesses tend not to be able to afford an IT resource in-house. They don't have expertise at all. And so for them, it's much easier for them just to trust someone else to do it for them and know that, you know, they've only got to pay a monthly, you know, expected amount of money each month to have, you know, someone else handle that for them. And that's great for their peace of mind.
Yeah. And brilliant. I suppose one thing that it has taught all businesses, I suppose, irrespective of size, is the fact that, you know, the future is somewhat uncertain, really. So in terms of, you know, capacity and scalability, whether that be flexing up or down, cloud provides, you know, massive benefit across the board, whether you're a small to medium business or a large corporate enterprise. Mm.
So, guys, just quickly, and we need to kind of sadly draw the show to an end now. Just give us a shout out for how people can get in touch with you guys and kind of kickstart that conversation.
Well, there's a couple of ways. By all means, you know, obviously visit the website, and there's all of the contact methods on there. The sales number to call and speak to one of our solution consultants. And there's also a sign-up form there for people that want to join the in-cloud, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically enables you to kind of register your interest and have us contact you.
Mm-hmm.
Or failing that, I'm happy for anyone that's kind of interested in exploring it further to reach out to me personally on my email address, which is jbishop@sky-clouds.com.
So the website is sky-cloud.com as well?
That's correct, yeah.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us today. It's fair to say that... it's been brilliant. I mean, the whole show's really been around, you know, how do we take what we've learnt from lockdown and all the kind of in the many positives, actually, that I think have come out of that, and how do we kind of take that and build on it and actually, you know, move forwards with it. So, you know, it's been great to have you on to talk about some of that. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having
me. Brilliant. Thanks, guys, and bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Well, Amy, it's been an action-packed show again today, hasn't it?
It sure has. We've covered a lot.
We have covered a lot of ground, haven't we? We've covered everything from, you know, data centres through to a brand-new exciting search engine that's on the market to cloud computing and what that means for businesses. So we really have covered a lot of ground today. But all that remains really for me to say is thank you so much for joining us, listener. And thank you, Amy, as well, for being in the studio and co-hosting today. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us.
No, likewise. Thanks very much for the opportunity. And I hope there's some listeners out there that have found it useful.
I think that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, hopefully we've been able to kind of demystify, you know, some of the world of data and technology for people out there, and hopefully given businesses something to think about in terms of, you know, how they apply that and use that in their inside their own business going
Absolutely.
Forward. So, yeah. But thank you again. We will be back in 2 weeks' time for another show on the 15th of March. And I think we're planning a bit of a sort of budget review show at that point as well. I think we're going to have some financial expertise in the studio, so that'll be worth tuning into as well. But for now, Amy Young at Custodian Data Centres, thank you so much.
Thank you, Martin.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.